The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer. I'm the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and much more, and we have an interesting show for you this week. I'm going to talk to my friend Richard Rushfield, one of the founding lights of The Ankler, which is a leading Hollywood newsletter. Richard went to the CinemaCon convention for movie theater owners this year, and he has a lot of interesting and hilarious observations about the state of movie going and the state of movies. And we'll have a nice, long, detailed conversation with him about that in a little bit. But I'm also going to talk to our critic Pablo Gallaga about Drop, which is a completely ludicrous new movie that really didn't do very well at the box office, but yeah, I think it's worth talking about sort of as a genre film. And Pablo and I both saw that at South by Southwest. Well, Pablo saw it at South by Southwest. I saw it at the Alamo, but it screened at South by Southwest. And as all South by Southwest movies do, it did much better at that festival than it did in real life. We're going to talk about Drop. I also wanted to put in a good word for a movie called Warfare, which is in theaters now and is also kind of struggling at the box office. It's directed by filmmaker Alex Garland, who most recently made Civil War. But unlike that movie, which was kind of a fantasy, this is a very realistic movie about the war in Iraq. It's set in 2006, and it's based on real-life memories of Iraq war veterans, and it's extremely visceral and extremely good, very well made, really compelling, and I highly recommend it. I think it's one of the best movies so far this year, but I could not find anyone on our roster who had actually seen it besides me, which is another problem. But go see Warfare. It's especially if you like war movies, it's really, really well made one. But first, we're going to talk to Richard Rushfield in a bit, but first we're going to talk to Pablo Gallaga about Drop right after this trailer for Drop.
Hey.
Hi.
You're very beautiful.
Sorry, I got a drink because I was nervous.
I had a couple in the car on the way over.
Someone keeps sending me these drops.
Who do you think it is? Violet, everything okay?
They chose me for a reason. There's something bigger happening here.
You know that movies are in trouble when Pablo Gallaga hasn't had a chance to see half the stuff that's been in theaters the last 2 months. But Pablo is here with me today, and he did see a movie called Drop, which I reviewed on Book and Film Globe, and I thought it was worth talking about. Now, Pablo, you saw Drop at South by Southwest.
Yeah, I did. Thanks for having me, Neil. It was the world premiere? I think it was.
Sure. but as we've discussed before on this program, you have to really take a reception that a movie gets at South by Southwest with a grain of salt, right?
Yeah, there's an inflated, you sit there and everyone's cheering and happy at a premiere. So yeah, it always gets like a half star inflation from that.
At least. Well, okay. So I saw Drop in the theater and, I can't say that I wasn't entertained in a basic way. The movie holds tension and it has some sort of deliciously hammy moments. It actually is kind of terrible, but not in a boring way. So the premise of the film is that Megan Fahey, who is best known to audiences from an Emmy-nominated turn on season two of The White Lotus, right? You saw her in that, I'm guessing.
Yeah, Daphne.
Daphne, she was amazing in that. And, I would say that this is her first starring role in a movie. And I think she holds the screen very well. She plays a woman named Violet, who is an online counselor for women who have survived abuse, right?
Yeah, and it's sort of on the nose because she's gone through abuse herself.
She has gone through, and we see that abuse in very graphic, really overly graphic detail, right? But, she she gets on a dating app and decides to get back on the horse, I guess, on the love train. And she goes on a date with a very bland photographer who lives in Chicago with her her annoying 5-year-old son Toby. They live in this gorgeous suburban mini mansion, conveniently located a five-minute drive from downtown Chicago.
Yeah, on that salary, on that online, I guess, therapist salary.
Yeah, not a realistic portrayal of what her financial situation might be. And having lived in Chicago, I can tell you that house, I mean, if she had lived in a house that nice, in 5 minutes from downtown, it would have cost her about $3.5 million. So I'm just a little unrealistic. Anyway, she goes on a date with this photographer and immediately starts getting these drop messages from some sinister force within. They're in a restaurant like on the top floor of a skyscraper.
Can we stop there for a second really quick? I want to point out that it's funny that it's like a generic version of AirDrop. I mean, obviously, like, Apple is very careful about, you know, their technology being used in films for like nefarious purposes. But like, I don't think I've ever seen AirDrop portrayed generically, which was very funny to me.
Yeah. And never used in quite this way to, you know, to essentially blackmail someone, you know. So let's not beat around the bush, right? Basically, like, the person, I won't say who it is, who's trying to blackmail her, is an agent of the mayor of city of Chicago. And apparently the photographer has some incriminating pictures on his camera, which he has conveniently brought to this dinner.
Yeah, you leave that somewhere secure. You don't risk your photography equipment.
No, he just brings it upstairs like he's like a student bringing a backpack into the cafeteria. And then she has to make all kinds of difficult choices. And somehow the nefarious villain also knows where she lives and has managed to get a black balaclava clad henchman into her house, which she can see because, you know, of course she has a security system that would make the Pentagon blush with the cameras in every room that she can watch off of her phone. And, if she doesn't do what he says, she will have the henchman kill her son. That's the plot of this movie.
Yeah. I mentioned in my recap of South By that this reminded me, like, if you took something more cynical, and I think you get at this in your review as well, like, it feels like something kind of exploitation, something cynical that's been softened by, like, your sort of cool aunt. Like, it's just not, it doesn't go in places where other things like this have gone. Like, it reminded me the most of Black Mirror's episode Shut Up and Dance, where instead of AirDrop, it's text messages of memes that are driving this person to go do these awful things. It's essentially the same plot, but that is like more profoundly executed than this. This is more like, I don't know, it's kind of warmed over in a way.
Yeah, yeah. That episode, and we'll talk about Black Mirror more next week, but that episode is super dark and cynical and brilliant, whereas this is just weird and kind of lame. And also, like, my main, but that all is fine. And again, like, Megan Fahey can carry a movie to, you know, and I think she deserved a better script than this. I didn't like the guy who played her date.
Brandon Sklenar. He's in 1923 now, and he was in It Ends With Us.
Yeah, he was a very generic man. It didn't have a lot of range. It wasn't very interesting. And no other character in the movie really matters. That stuff with the wacky improv waiter really didn't work at all.
It killed at the premiere for whatever reason, but I agree.
So lame. And then, like, you know, the food, the menu seemed to be, you know, that was something like out of 1993. The guy ordered his Kobe beef filet medium.
Medium. Oh, no. I cringed. I was like, I was hoping that would kind of pay off later as some reason for doing that, but that was a weird detail.
Yeah. I'm like, no. No, you just take it medium rare, like a man. That's how you know, that's an expensive cut of meat. It also bothered me that they didn't eat any of the food. That's a lot of money on the table there. But really, to me, the main problem with the movie was that most of it's just kind of like text messaging drama and suspense. And then occasionally there's some incredibly vicious and graphic violence, mostly toward women. You know, women are getting thrown around the room and getting stabbed and having their heads slammed into counters and just beating the crap out of. And that's not to say that you can't do that effectively in a movie for dramatic effect. but I felt gratuitous, especially given the tone of most of the film.
Yeah, it's a troubling trend where it seems like if you're setting up, you know, a final girl situation, a revenge situation, like I think I've seen it recently in, I mean, we talked about Companion that happened a little bit with Sophie Thatcher. Like that's just seems like they're pushing the envelope there so that the payoff is bigger when, you know, she gets her revenge. But yeah, that is troubling to see that so over the top. When it's not really an exploitation film, like if it was billing itself that way, then yeah.
Yeah, or like a prison film or something. But I'm seeing women get thrown across the room a lot in movies directed by men. And I feel like there is a way to, not just like being hit or even like burned with like a cigarette lighter, you know, like ways that you used to see women get abused in movies. Now, I know that abuse of violence against women does happen, but this is beyond violence against women. I mean, what happens to Megan Fahey's character would break her neck in like one throw.
And it's not just her, sister as well.
Yeah, yes.
Like really gets put through the ringer.
For no reason.
Yeah, so disproportionate.
You know, or what happens, I mean, spoiler alert, what happens to that poor waitress in the restaurant or the bartender? Like, why? Why would you do that to her?
Yeah, it was odd.
I mean, there was some violence against men too, but it was a little, except for the main villain, it was a little softer. I guess the boyfriend gets it pretty bad, but even that's like, he's not getting thrown across the room. Just bizarre. So, you know, Drop is a strange movie. I feel like, again, I keep having these imaginary retrospectives of these of modern genre movies in my mind. I feel like what it really was, it pales in comparison to a movie from last year, M. Night Shyamalan's Trap.
I had that on my list. Like there's sort of, and we keep talking about the trend of these fun thrillers that aren't quite going as far as we saw maybe 5 years ago in horror. Yeah. Trap definitely, came to mind while I was watching that. Obviously the Black Mirror episode I mentioned. And again, Companion came to mind. It's interesting. And this comes from Christopher Landon, who did the Happy Death Day movies, and very recently had the hit with Heart Eyes, which I have not seen yet. I gotta check that out. But I'm hearing good things about that.
All right, so it does fit into this sort of modern genre, and I think if you were to do a retrospective, which is an idea that I have come up with in my mind repeatedly, I think you would have to put this in there along with Trap, which by the way is a much better movie and much more fun and much less disturbing in some ways because it's not so violent against women.
Right, yeah. I enjoyed Trap much more than I did this one. It's getting some positive reviews out there. Yours is middle of the road for it. And I think I would kind of land somewhere around there.
Yeah, all right. Drop is in theaters now for about another 5 minutes, and then it will drop onto some streaming service or maybe onto your phone. Maybe someone will just drop a file of it onto your phone and you'll be forced to watch it. And if you don't watch it, someone you love will die. How about that?
A generic airdrop.
That would be like a good market. That would be good marketing. Either watch this movie or someone you love will die.
Yeah. That would get me in the theater.
Put me in charge. All right, Pablo Gallega, thank you so much.
Thanks, Neil.
Summer is almost upon us. And while summer movies don't really mean what they used to, the summer movie season is still a time when most people go to the movies, when many blockbusters come out and the popcorn is spilled all over the floor of the theater. It's certainly my favorite time of year to go to the movies. I go to the movies every day, no matter what the season, but I often look forward to what's coming out in the summer. I can turn my brain off for about 100 hours or so.
But
no better a person than in the world to it's almost always off. And that voice that you hear is the voice of Richard Rushfield, a good friend of mine and of the program, and a contributing writer and one of the founding lights of The Ankler, which is a leading newsletter of contemporary Hollywood. And Richard, I think, is a good person to talk about summer movies, not because necessarily he goes to more movies than anyone else, because he doesn't, but because he covers the entertainment and the film industry and attended CinemaCon this year in Las Vegas. Now, Richard, tell the uninitiated.
So every year in Las Vegas at Caesar's Palace, it's the convention of theater owners, essentially, is what it is. The group Cinema United, which is the theater owners trade group or whatever. They all get together at Caesar's Palace every year, and all the studios come across the stage in the Coliseum, and they do the presentations on their slates of, they basically present, here's all the movies we have coming out in the next year. And they show trailers for it. It'll show clips. In some cases, they show the entire film, or they'll show you a half hour from it. The stars of the film are often there to stand on the stage and have awkward conversations with the executives, which gets you really excited to see it. Some of the studios do little shows, and then they have giant parties by the pool where elderly Midwestern theater owners try to dance to Rolling Stone cover bands. So it's a lot of fun. Every year.
And this happens every year. So, and you know, this isn't like Comic-Con or, you know, a movie festival, right? Like, literally the only people attending this are people who actually work in the industry.
It is not for the general public. I mean, it is a timing that sometimes they'll announce things there and then they'll do the announcement publicly. But unlike Comic-Con, you're not allowed to take pictures or use any of it. It's they police it very, very assiduously.
Now, one of the things we talk about on the site and on the show a lot is the sort of decline in movie theaters, in movie theater attendance and quality of the movie going experience. That's something you and I talk about all the time. Were those concerns on the tips of everyone's tongues, on the front of everyone's minds at CinemaCon this year, or were they pretending that everything is okay?
Runs really thick with the theater owners. It's beginning to finally be pierced here. For years, CinemaCon was dominated by this debate about the windows, that the theaters traditionally they had this 90-day exclusive of you could. Movie had to be in theaters for 90 days and couldn't be anywhere else for 90 days. And with COVID, all that crumbled. There would always be a fight about that between the studios wanting it to be shorter. And pre-COVID, the theater owners were allowed to say, it will not be shorter. We will not talk about it being shorter. We will not debate this. Hell with you. Do it or we're not showing your movies. And the studios caved before that. And then COVID came, and now the window is 3 weeks or maybe four. And the big theme of this year were the theaters taking the stand, like, we think it should be 45 days. And we want to have a hard 45 days, to which the studios replied else what, bucko?
So the studios don't want it. We've talked about the 90-day window on the show before.
Because
the studios don't want it.
So what happens when you have a 90-day window? What you're basically trying to do is have one marketing campaign that covers your both your theatrical release and your PVOD release or your SVOD release, paid video. So in the ideal way of... for studios, you would put it out into the theaters. It would have, in their minds, a few weeks where people would go, and then it would just transition to SVOD, and the glow and the awareness from the campaign that they spend tens of millions of dollars on would still be in the air. Whereas if they have to do it 90 days later, that's already faded, so they've got to do a whole new campaign for it.
Right, and so you're getting SVOD means streaming video on demand, and so you're basically getting a residual marketing effect where, like, you know, people who maybe didn't catch it in the theaters but then are willing to spend $4 to watch it on Amazon Prime or wherever or just buy it sort of independently are then going to start then going to tweet about it, and sort of the hype will either finally begin or can renew a bit.
Yeah, and this is a very consequential and extremely boring debate that just goes back and forth every single year and never seems to move until, except for the time COVID just broke it. And, you know, next year I will be going back to CinemaCon, and I will be standing in the same room with the same people having exactly the same conversation about the window and probably will not have moved an inch, which, you know, at this point, it is to the detriment of the theaters and people who care about the cinematic experience.
Yes, I personally also believe that movies should just stay in theaters all summer like they used to. You know, something would open in June and it would still be playing, you know, maybe not in, you know, wide release, but you could still catch it in some kind of a theater in September.
And we've now trained people that, like, if you want to see a movie, if a movie comes out, like, it will be available for you at home within a couple weeks. So there's no need to race out to see anything because it will imminently be in your home, which is true much of the time, and has much to do with the decline in theater going there.
Well, yeah, and I enjoy, you know, we talk about this all the time. I personally like going to movies, but I have access to a lot of Alamo Draft Houses in Austin and other quality movie theaters. You know, and you live in Los Angeles where there are better movie going options than the majority of Americans have. But for a lot of people, going to the movies is just simply unpleasant. And I don't feel like the theater owners are really doing a lot to address that too. Was there anything at CinemaCon to indicate that they had any interest in improving the product that they're serving up?
Improving it's interesting because a big trend in the theaters is these premium screens, and which the big chains are adding premium screens within their multiplexes. And then there's...
You mean IMAXs?
The IMAXs or the Dolby theaters and, you know, the dining in your seat places and yeah. and all these chains that are springing up that have, you know, these fancy options. So that's the big theme that's going on, and there are very mixed feelings about that by the theater owners. So I thought going in that was going to be heralded as, look at this new thing we have that is getting people excited about going to the theater and everything. Instead, they seem to be saying, oh, we're cannibalizing our own audience, we're making the regular screen not special. And there seemed to be resentment on the part of the kind of normal theaters towards the premium screens.
To me, the thing that like excites me about going to the movies, and I know there's a huge trend of it in Los Angeles, and there's a bit of a movement toward that in Austin as well, or sort of revival houses or themed festival type screenings. You know, repertory cinema. I mean, obviously, like the audience for repertory cinema in, say, I don't know, like, you know, suburban Indianapolis isn't going to be what it is, you know, in Westwood or Austin or, you know, the Lower East Side of Manhattan. But I'm wondering if there may be, you know, that if there's any kind of movement in that direction.
So overall, these folks at the CinemaCon, the theater owners, I mean, they're sort of like, you got two kinds of movies. You got Dwayne Johnson movies and you got Ryan Reynolds movies. and half of Ryan Reynolds movies, they're not even sure are really movies. So that's kind of the range they're dealing with. And like every year you have one that like 1 year Neon indie film distributor did a presentation and you had David Cronenberg talk about his explorations into body horror to the theater, and people are just like, what is this? And then they presented their exclusive footage from their new David Bowie documentary, which was excellent, but they showed it there and people were just like, first of all, who the hell is David Bowie? And second, like, documentary? What does that mean? This isn't a real movie? Is that like, so it's unfake? What are you saying this is? Like,
so you're telling me at this year's CinemaCon there was not a preview of The Shrouds?
No, there was not. And they always here and there, like, one of the distributors will try to slip in something sort of arty and it just goes over every time, like a lead balloon.
All right, a lead balloon. So lead balloons. All right.
Yeah.
But there were some sort of helium filled balloons at CinemaCon. There, I saw you. You took a photo with some Megan doll in person.
Yeah, I met some Megans. That was great. My new friend. And I gotta say, we had a real connection.
These were like young women pretending to be Android dolls.
Well, I don't know that they're pretending. They didn't say that.
But they might have been actual Android dolls. Well, obviously, Megan 2.0 was one of the movies they were selling to a general audience.
Yes, and that is coming. And then there's also Blumhouse is doing Megan 2. And then they're doing, I can't remember the name of it, but it's kind of a grown-up Megan is doing. Because you can think of other uses of animatronic, lifelike dolls of young women that people might put that.
But that's not Megan 2. There's another animatronic.
No, it's another. It is a separate movie in the Megan spirit that I can't remember the name of.
Okay.
But is also coming out.
It's a genre because I don't know if that movie Companion that came out.
Yes.
That was sort of an animatronic female sex robot.
This one seems much more sort of R-rated in its implications and violence.
And then I'm guessing there was quite a bit of superhero fare.
A bit. Well, so one thing, it's something I've written about and noticed that it's kind of disturbing for Hollywood, but it kind of gives me hope. Is that kind of every major franchise that so Hollywood's been dominated by these franchises and these series and everything, and pretty much every one of them is either like retooling or on ice or at a crossroads right now
or ending.
Yeah, so you look at like Fast and Furious, which for the first year in like 20 years, there was no mention of. There wasn't an announcement about it coming. There was it was just off the table. Fast and Furious, you know, Marvel has been really struggling lately. DC is a big question mark with their new Superman movie. So either they will revitalize the genre or spectacularly crash and burn and take down a whole studio with them. So there's a lot of those. Jurassic Park is still they've got another Jurassic coming out, and people seem to like the Jurassic formula. Someone else decided to make a theme park with dinosaurs, and on the eighth try,
it's not a theme park in this. If you watch the preview, it's just there are still some dinosaurs left on an island. You know, they keep forgetting about them, and then
they're on an island. Like
they're still out there on an island and in the ocean around an island. Yeah, what could possibly go on? All right, so you were indicating from your deep exploration of CinemaCon that these franchises, these massive franchises, seem to be on their way out. But what is going to step into the breach?
That's the question, and that's we got a bit of seeing some original filmmaking and some big swings, as it were, that's coming out. But you know the studios are facing a big hole in their lineups where the franchises used to be, and we're going to see what they put in it. The Sony, probably the biggest swing of the festival in terms of original filmmaking, is Sony brought out Sam Mendes to talk about he's making these four Beatles movies, but one about each Beatle, and they're all going to come out at one time. Or within the space of 1 month.
When is that? Is that this year? That next year?
That will be in 2028. So, provided
every year that you delay a Beatles film, is you're losing 10% of people who actually like the Beatles.
So the reason this is a challenge. So the average film goer goes to the theater, I think, twice a year. At this point. And so you're asking him four times in a month. The Beatles broke up before the majority of current film goers were born.
The vast majority of people on Earth, really.
Yeah.
The Beatles broke up before Nixon resigned. Yeah. I mean, it's a long time ago.
Exactly. So you're asking him to show up for four movies about this. So, you know, hats off to the folks at Sony for taking a chance of that, and I would love to see it work out.
I mean, the Bob Dylan movie did okay, but it was just one movie.
That was a fairly traditional music biopic, and there's another.
Yeah, that also came out during, you know, it was traditional music biopic that was like aimed at Oscar season, and that had a, you know, I liked it, but that the point is there weren't four Bob Dylan movies.
No, in one month.
In one month. All right. So, and any other big swings that you can remember from CinemaCon, or is it all just kind of a blur?
Well, so another thing that's been a source of controversy here in Hollywood is the Warner Brothers. They have Paul Thomas Anderson has been given it. People call it outrage because they've given him $150 million to make this movie, and the idea that you're giving Paul Thomas Anderson $150 million, which is, you know, about half what a Marvel movie costs. So,
and he's basically adapting a Thomas Pynchon novel.
And there has never been a single article saying a Marvel movie costs too much money. So, right. But it stars Leo DiCaprio, who is one of the last bona fide movie stars, and they showed a trailer of it. They showed an extended look at it, which there's a scene of Leo yelling at someone on a phone, being very intense. And then there are other scenes of cars flying off bridges and people shooting at each other. So you have a sense that it won't just be a Paul Thomas Anderson movie of people having odd conversations in places, but they'll be shooting and crazy driving also.
That's generally shooting and crazy driving is generally a good combination for Hollywood success. Okay, so Hollywood's big hopes, from what I'm gathering, are a revival of Superman, four Beatles biopics being released in the same month, and a Paul Thomas Anderson directed action movie starring Leonardo DiCaprio.
That would go through the studios here. You have Lionsgate has another Hunger Games coming. Oh, Lionsgate also, speaking of franchises that aren't dead, they announced like three new John Wick projects. Mm. So they've got the Ballerina coming with the Ana de Armas, and then they're going to do John Wick 6, or what number are we up to?
Five.
And then they're going to do a prequel. Mm. So lots of John Wick for everybody. We're going to, you say, give us more Wick. Your prayers have been heard.
All right. Well, it sounds like the foundations are a little shaky, to be honest, but I'll go see anything. I wish there were more people like me. I know you would, if you didn't have, younger children, you would probably be the same way, I'm guessing.
Yes. Yeah. That's the thing that.
Once active parenthood ends, Richard, I promise you that the movie going is still there, it is a reward for you. It's some candy. It's some movie candy that I'm holding out for you.
So here's the problem with this, that this really haunts me, particularly at festivals, is that movie going was a kind of no lose situation for me, because if the movie wasn't good, then I'd get a nap, and you know, that's a win for everybody. But hour alone to take a nap is a great thing. So who can complain about that? The problem is as I enter a less healthy advanced middle age, the sleep apnea situation is heating up, and so when I take a nap, I can snore. I'm told extreme volume that has caused me some trouble in theaters, particularly at festivals when I'm sitting in a room with the filmmakers.
Well, and you know, the theater going audience, unless you're seeing the Minecraft movie, is aging. Maybe you should discuss with the distributors next year at CinemaCon. You should discuss CPAP screenings.
A good nap room screening.
Yeah, you could purchase a clean mouthpiece. Yeah. at the concession stand. Obviously, you don't want to be using like someone else's mouthpiece in the CPAP.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you have reclining seats that automatically recline. You could also have a CPAP function. I think that's something we should consider for next year's CinemaCon. Richard, that is that's all the time we have today, I'm all afraid.
Right.
I would talk I would talk to you endlessly, but I can't. I have other things to do. I got to get going. So
it's been a pleasure, Neil.
Richard Rushfield, thank you so much for bailing me out this week.
My pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Richard Rushfield. You can find him on The Ankler at theankler.com and occasionally on Book and Film Globe's podcast, where he is a gracious and frequent guest of mine. Also, thanks to critic Pablo Gallaga for dropping in to talk to me about Drop, a movie that will soon be dropping out of theaters and dropping onto some streaming service near you. I am Neil Pollack. I am the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and so much more. I will be back to talk at you next week with more red-hot book and film and TV action. Talk to you soon.
Original production. The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.